nutritionist has an idea, and the fin mill manager has a bin space or a number of ingredients he can use. So it's a very, very interesting, and I hope it's a friendly interaction between those two professionals, who will then deliver in a small pallet all what the animal needs to eat. Because this is our goal, to provide the animals with the safe and nutritious food.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Kemin invites you to optimize animal feed quality and safety with our portfolio of solutions. Learn more at kemin.com/AG. Evonik, we are sciencing the global food challenge.
Hello and welcome to the Feed Science Podcast from North Carolina State University. I'm Adam Fahrenholz, and on behalf of Wisenetics, thanks for joining us today. My guest for this episode of the podcast is Dmitry Zaritsky. Dmitry has spent some time and has received degrees in various different areas relating to the feed space, some things related to feed milling, some things related to nutrition. So we're going to have a discussion today about how those things interact. Dmitry, how are you doing today? Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm very happy to be here today. Thank you for letting me talk. Always happy to see the fellow NC State professor.
Absolutely. So if you wouldn't mind, introduce yourself a little bit more to our audience and give us some of your background and kind of how you came into this space, and then the things that you've been doing and things you've been working on.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you. I'm happy to share a little bit about myself. Well, my name is Dmitry. I'm a Russian person who came to NC State as a Fulbright exchange scholar and obtained two master's degrees in nutrition and reproductive physiology and animal science, as well as a very fantastic opportunity that I took advantage of and obtained the feed milling certificate that was designed and developed by Dr. Fahrenholz. That certificate allowed me to secure a very valuable job and a lot of experience that I would like to share today with everybody who is listening to us.
Sure. So I guess we'll kind of jump right into it. Because you've had some of that experience and the educational background related to nutrition, and then when you went out and started working in the industry, you spent time in the feed mills. What are some of your impressions of the way that nutrition and feed manufacturing interact in a practical sense?
In my opinion, the nutritionist is a person who has an idea of what the animal should consume and the shape of it. And the feed miller and its team and the feed mill itself is the place where they make it. So as a nutritionist, and that's what I realized, not everybody has experience in feed milling. And like I said, nutritionist has an idea, and the feed mill manager has a bin space or a number of ingredients he can use. So it's a very, very interesting, and I hope it's a friendly interaction between those two professionals, who will then deliver in a small pallet all what the animal needs to eat. Because this is our goal, to provide the animals with a safe and nutritious food.
Yeah, so so in theory, right, everybody is kind of rowing in the same direction, like you say, pull. Yeah. You know, we're trying to make sure the animal is getting the food they need, or in the case of the commercial feed industry, that the customer is getting the food they paid for if they're mm-hmm. buying the feed versus the integrated. Obviously, we're doing all the feeding of our own animals in that particular system. So in theory, we're all going in the same direction, but sometimes there are complications in that. And you pointed out one right there. We have an idea, and that idea might include a better way to feed the animals on paper based on something we're trying to do nutritionally. But at the feed mill, maybe it's going to be very difficult for us to use another ingredient.
Exactly.
Or that particular ingredient. So how in your experience have those kind of things been navigated when there's the idea and then in practice it's going to be difficult to implement? What have you experienced that has looked like? And then in your impression, what should it look like as far as those discussions go?
To be honest, every time, for example, we would have a new phytase source in our feed mill, and we would have to run the a new diet, the experimental diet. With the new ingredient, it will require another bin space. You know, you have to schedule it. In my case, the team worked very well. I was impressed how it is, because feed mill, it works a lot like the animal digestive system. You know, the ingredients come and it gets grinded, it kind of gets digested and comes out as a product, although it's used, not discarded.
Right.
And then in this case, it is always takes a good coordination, you know, between the people, because sometimes you just have five extra bags that are easy to lose in the huge facility where you have hundreds and thousands of bags and totes. So I would say the key is coordination, communication. So it has to be, you know, the team has to work as a good scheduler. So here's the scheduling is very important, because with the feed mill, you cannot just go one feed after another. You know, you have your own schedule, you have your own animals, you have your own feed orders that are in the system. And of course, with all the medication and the flushing sequences, you have to keep that in mind.
Absolutely. And I think another thing, and you touched on a little bit, and I think we can discuss it a bit more, is the value potentially of each side of that conversation, understanding the role of the other side, right? Where it helps, and we've started doing this a little bit more with, let's say, on some of our extension work, where we're working with feed mills directly and trying to spend a little more time helping folks understand the nutrition and why they're doing what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And then on the flip side, it really helps when the people that are doing the nutrition work understand the capabilities of what the mill can or cannot do. And that, you know, that really seems like that will always help that conversation when people aren't of an opinion that one side or the other can do something that they can't.
Absolutely. Absolutely. In one particular case comes up in my mind, the use of acidifiers in the facility. And when it's hot and humid, the acidifier, you know, it hurts. You know, as a feed mill manager, I have to provide the safe equipment, a PPE, for my employees. And as a nutritionist, let's say if I have a chance of selecting the supplier, I would try to have some acidifier that is less volatile, for example, something that might be as useful in case if that's something of a concern.
Yep.
So that is as a nutritionist and as a feed mill manager, you have to be kind of doing your jobs right. I would say that.
Yeah, sure. I think another then thing that you kind of touched on that is having that good communication. And of course, that can work in a lot of different ways. I'm curious, in your mind, in your experience, what have been the ways that communication has worked the best? Is it just open lines all the time? Is it, you know, a regular scheduled, hey, every Thursday at 3, we have a meeting between the teams? You know, I'm sure you've experienced different forms of what that communication looks like. Maybe talk a little bit about what you've seen that hasn't worked very well and things that really have worked very well about keeping that communication going between the different, you know, nutrition, procurement, feed milling, transportation, all those different things that will come into getting the food to the animal and it being the right food at the end of the day.
Good question. What worked with us and in my particular situation is whenever there's any change, there has to be a meeting. If there are any changes, or let's say quarterly meetings are very useful, no doubt about that. We go by our numbers and we share if there are some major changes. But whenever there is something extra needs to be done, the feed mill employees are very respectful when people come and talk to them. You know, that shows you that you value their time, that you give them your time, you invest in them. That is very, very useful. And, you know, just keeping that good communication from top to bottom, whenever it works, things go much smoother.
Yep, absolutely. That all certainly makes a lot of sense. Again, my guest today is Dmitry Zaritsky. Dmitry has experience in the nutrition and feed manufacturing side. And so we're having a conversation here today about kind of how those things interact. kind of moving on to a slightly different topic, I also know that you've had experience working in different types of facilities as you've been out in the industry, some on the smaller side, some on the larger side. So maybe let's spend a little time talking about that. And we can certainly bring that discussion back into nutrition as well. What are some of the key differences that you see when you've been out and you've seen, okay, this is what it's like working and doing management activities in a smaller facility versus, let's say, one of the larger ones where, you know, we've got different requirements for tonnage, different types of customer bases, different relationships with consulting nutritionists versus company nutritionists. All those things can be very different depending on the size of the operation that we're talking about.
Well, absolutely. Well, I worked for an integrated side of pork business. I worked in three different size facilities. One facility having one line, one pelleting line. The other had two, and the other had three. So, of course, a lot of things are different from a number of employees. You know, with a one line, you just have one person running the whole mill. And you don't even need a dispatcher. That person dispatches. That person. I mean, they don't receive. That was a good thing. We had one person who was receiving and the other one in the control room. But once you go up, those things change because you have a lot more trucks. You have you double the tonnage or you triple the tonnage. I would say the smaller the mill, I wouldn't say relaxed, but more pace kind of goes down. Once you go up, you might have two trucks loading at the same time. You know, we have three machines running at the same time. And I would say that going from two pellet lines to three pellet lines was quite a big upgrade. Because going back to our previous topic, when we're using either experimental diets or the medicated feeds, this is a lifesaver. So you just have a whole line that does medicated feed and you don't have to worry about sequencing that there will be some errors made. Yes, you do produce a lot more volumes. Yeah, that's just the first things that come in my mind, to be honest.
Yeah, I think one of the things that, as you said, it makes for an interesting conversation on the size perspective. We certainly know that as we build these very, very large feed mills, our overall efficiencies go up. As you said, you might need more people in some cases because of the amount of volume that you're moving through, but you're increasing the volume much more quickly than you're increasing the number of people. And so the person hours, man hours per, mm-hmm. per ton are dropping or tons per man hour going up, however you want to look at that particular ratio. And it is very interesting conversation, as you said, about on the one side, it's more complex to have, let's say, three different lines running from the standpoint of now I have an operator that's having to watch three different machines that all behave a little differently, things like that. Mm-hmm. But in some ways, it also makes it simpler because over here on line number one, I can, let's say, be running finisher feed. Mm-hmm. And that thing's been running finisher feed since, you know, 2 days ago. And all I've got to do is have it run finisher feed. So I never have to worry about shutting down another line to get to the finisher feed. So I've reduced my changeover. So it's more equipment to watch. It's more equipment to maintain, but it's made the process more efficient. And I think that give and take when we think about designing the facilities and then operating it can be really interesting because there's going to be positives and negatives to both sides of that, right?
Absolutely. When I was working on the one line, we would have to go and clean the cooler every time we switched the feed. Or every time we made some medicated feed. So that was you had the whole mill is not working at this time. So yeah, going back to efficiency, that's true. Whereas on the three line mills, it just keeps on going days and days. And then also these days mills are built slightly different so that they have a huge loadout bin space. So they can load many trucks. So that gives you for emergencies and some emergency maintenance cases, a broken shear pin in the one mill line stops you for, I don't know, an hour if people are not experienced enough. And with a huge, I don't know, 200 ton bin gives you a lot of time to replace it. And nobody would probably even notice.
How about on the people management side? Obviously, you already spoke a little bit about the size of the team can change. Mm-hmm. How about the actual management of those teams? Is it, have you found it to be significantly different or relatively the same, whether it be small facility, larger facility, as far as kind of the personnel management of those people?
I believe that in my experience, what I saw that in the smaller mill, the manager would be a lot more involved in a lot of things because, you know, he's a spare hand. He can help, you know, me and other supervisors, we were replacing the drag chain on the top roof conveyor for pellets. You know, it took us some time because it's not one man's job. On the other hand, when you have a bigger mill, the manager could be present there, but usually the team that's on the floor at that day is big enough, you know, big enough to replace that. And you, even though you have three lines, but you know, they never broken at the same time. Two working, one is one you're replacing the die on one, and the other one will run for another month or two. So you kind of can schedule it. So once again, it's more efficient to have something bigger. You can have less people, and honestly, it gives you more experience. You know, the bigger the mill, the more experience you get. I was very happy, and like I said, I'm very thankful for the team that I worked for back then.
For sure. How about on then some of the things related to, just to kind of go back as we kind of wrap up with our time on the discussion, how about going back to some of the nutritional conversation? How is that different from your experience in the smaller facility versus the larger facility? And obviously there's going to be differences on that commercial retail feed type of a situation versus an integrated, but just on the size of the facility, you know, smaller bins, less bin space, how do those things impact the discussions that happen as far as what ingredients we're going to bring in, again, procurement and conversations with nutrition on what diets can look like, and even conversations with transportation on how we're going to move feed. How does the size of the facility impact those kinds of discussions?
Well, to be honest, it's hard to pinpoint one thing. We had particular one mill that was kind of dedicated to any significant to any, let's say, experimental feeds. So mm-hmm. that we would use one, and there the team would be let's say ready for any changes. And it was a two line facility that was pretty good. The other mills, they were making the experimental diets, for example, and they would, but they would be for a lot larger, let's say for finisher pigs. So the mm-hmm. you know the it would kind of respond to that. The biggest difference was probably that the bigger the facility, the more trucks you would have, and that would impact. Mm-hmm. Let's say one mill would have 7 trucks of corn a day, and the other one would have almost 70 in the high season.
Sure.
So because of the whole system is a kind of a replica of itself, in just in the larger scale with each mill, there wasn't much of a discussion, but the technology implementation was slightly different, I would say.
Sure.
We were working a lot with the NIR, near infrared technology. I really like that. I think mm-hmm. I think there's a future behind that technology because, you know, it's so easy to use. I really liked working with that. It gives you a lot of data, and it looks pretty accurate to me.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, that's probably, NIR has been around obviously for quite some time, but every year there are new advancements and new abilities that we can use with that. We're seeing more with inline NIR coming to various different facilities, not to mention all other kinds of ways to test and monitor and sensors and probes and everything else. And again, I think that ends up being part of that discussion with all of the different entities involved in the feed manufacturing. And then it's a discussion based on the size and the output of the facilities and things like that, who is able to adopt those types of technologies and then actually get the biggest advantage out of them. And, you know, in that situation, not every company and not every facility is equal, from the standpoint of, well, if I put this new technology in this mill versus that mill, some will be able to really utilize it and make a difference, and others of them, that they're not to the point, or they're not manufacturing the types of feeds, or they're not doing the types of production runs where that technology would necessarily actually provide a benefit. It might provide information, mm-hmm. but it can't be used to a benefit, which I think is always an interesting discussion of, you know, you should adopt technologies that are actually beneficial to you, not just because it's a new technology, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I totally agree with that.
So I think that's a major thing too, which could be something for a future discussion, and something that we've had with various guests in the past. I'm sure the audience would recognize some of those topics have come up before.
It's time for our famous three.
Dimitri, I very much have enjoyed our conversation. We always like to close out with folks asking kind of some development, professional development types of questions. So the first question ends up being, what have you found in your time going through, you know, school and in the supervisor roles and everything else that you've done? What have you found to be particularly good resources for this industry? If someone was thinking about coming to work in the industry or is already working in the industry and wants to learn more, what have been good resources about how to, you know, operate, you know, both operate a mill or operate in a mill that have been beneficial to you?
Honestly, I really enjoyed the classes that we had at NC State. That was an eye opener.
Well, I appreciate that. We did not pay for that particular advertisement.
Well, I mean, I believe that I wouldn't get that job if I wasn't part of it, that I couldn't, you know, you go on an interview and me, I'm a newcomer, you know, my family is not involved in feed milling. You know, you had to talk to people and you have to speak with them in the same language. So they trust you. So it's all about trust in a way. So I found the lectures and the courses that we went through very useful. And then I believe the having a positive attitude and the kind of go and get it. And, you know, learning by doing attitude really helps, you know, not being scared to get dusty. You know, feed milling is a dusty business.
Sure.
But knowing all that and reading all the supplemental materials and just talking to people was very, very useful. You know, let's say I learned how to weld, and everybody was, you know, kind of happy to see me welding. And it's a very useful skill, you know. So just having those three things would take you far, you know. It took me far from NC State to Oklahoma, for example.
Then the last question then is, you've obviously you've had a chance to work with a number of different folks. You went through graduate school and got to work with faculty, and you've been out in the industry and you've worked with people. So you've gotten to work with a lot of people who have been very successful in the careers that they've chosen. If you had to pick traits that you saw, if you had to pick one or two traits and these people that I've worked with, worked for, worked alongside that have been very successful, they seem to exhibit this trait. This is something they do that I've, you know, chosen to model some of my behaviors after. If you had to pick one or two, what might those be?
I would say, you know, being straightforward, treating people equally. You know, we work for people with people with different backgrounds. You know, they came from all over the world. From Europe, from Latin America, from North America. That being said, you just have to remember that we're all human beings, you know. And let's say integrity is very important. So, you know, if you said something, you're going to do it. Leading by example really helps. So let's say never asking people that something you won't do is a good way to go. I believe that helps. And trying to be, you know, more human-like, you know, showing that you're interested in those people, that they're not just employees and they have other lives. That always helps, because everybody is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
There are people that share something that you never heard and never seen.
Those are great suggestions. Those are really, really good. And it's a great way for us to finish off. Again, my guest today has been Dmitry Zaritsky. Dmitry, thank you very much for your time today. We enjoyed the conversation.
I enjoyed it as well. Thank you very much for your time.
You bet. Our pleasure. Once again, on behalf of Wisenetics, my name is Adam Farenholz, coming to you from North Carolina State University in the Animal Feed Manufacturing Program here. This has been the Feed Science Podcast. Thanks for listening, and we will talk to you the next time.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.